I'm Sami Zeydan. You're joining us for our special coverage of the second round of Turkey's presidential election. Well, this comes, of course, after a first round which saw no clear winner, but did see the incumbent president emerge ahead of his challenger, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, with about 5 points. It also saw the ruling party alliance dominate the parliamentary elections in the first round, winning a majority there. Well, now the big question is, what will shape up and emerge from the second round of voting? This is a historic day by all measures, with the first time in this country's history that a presidential election has gone to a second round. We saw voters come out at 5 a.m. GMT to cast their ballots in this unprecedented vote. Well, Rasul Sardar now looks at how things have panned out so far in the voting.
Many consider this election to be Turkey's most significant in its recent history. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan voted in Istanbul, where he began his political career. He has reshaped the nation in the last 2 decades. His supporters believe he has made it more powerful and prosperous.
I want Erdogan to win for the sake of stability for this country.
Stability and continuity have been the message throughout Erdogan's election campaign. But after more than 2 decades in power, he now faces his most difficult challenge. 6 opposition parties have joined forces for this presidential runoff, with opposition leader Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu chosen as their unified candidate. He was second in the first round on May 14th. As he came to cast his vote in Ankara, he was welcomed by his supporters. They are growing more confident that he will be Turkey's next president.
The whole nation wants change because our country wants its rights, justice and rule of law.
Neither President Erdogan nor the opposition leader Kılıçdaroğlu could secure enough votes to win in the first round. It was the high votes for nationalist parties that forced the election to the second round.
The rise of the nationalist parties was the main surprise of the first round. That has forced the presidential candidates to reconsider their election strategy to appeal to the nationalist votes in the runoff.
The opposition leader Kılıçdaroğlu has focused his second round campaign on anti-refugee sentiments, promising to send home millions of Syrian, Afghan and Pakistani refugees. "Syrians will go" is one of the main slogans written on billboards. As a result, the leader of the ultra-nationalist Victory Party, Ümit Özdağ, has announced his support for Kılıçdaroğlu. But Sinan Ogan, another ultra-nationalist presidential candidate who came third in the first round, has decided to support President Erdogan in the runoff. The preliminary results will be announced hours after voters cast their ballots. But this election is closely watched, especially by millions of refugees facing fear and uncertainty. Resul Serdar, Al Jazeera, Ankara.
All right, we're covering this election with correspondents across the country. We've got Sinem Kosoğlu in Istanbul. But first, let's start with Rasul Sardar. He's in Ankara watching how things have been unfolding there, particularly with the opposition. And Rasul, are we seeing a last-minute push, we can say, by the opposition to try and make sure they get as many of their followers out to the polls?
Indeed, Sami, we have just seen that the leader of the opposition, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, has just tweeted and warned the people to go out and to cast their votes. Because here, one thing is clear. Among these two leaders, President Erdogan and Kılıçdaroğlu, whoever can mobilize his supporters is going to emerge as victorious tonight. That's why the turnout is quite important for both sides. And here, we are in a polling station that the opposition leader Kılıçdaroğlu also was here and cast his vote here. And you can see that the process is still continuing. But unlike the previous round, we are not seeing the long queues here. And of course, the representatives of the parties, officials here, are telling us that that doesn't mean that the turnout is going to be lower. However, because the process is easier, there are only 2 names that are competing. And so that's why we are witnessing a faster process here. However, the concerns are still there. So particularly for Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, that is very, very important because since assuming the office in 2010 on, he has lost several elections against President Erdogan, but this time the hopes were quite high because 6 opposition parties they joined their forces to defeat President Erdogan, despite in the first round being the second in the first round of the election. Still, we can see that both Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu and his supporters believe that he could emerge as Turkey's next president. So if he loses, probably that's going to cost his political career. But if he wins, that's going to be a historic moment in Turkey, because he's going to be the first one who defeats Erdogan. Sami.
All right, thanks so much, Rasul Sardar there. That's great stuff. Let's continue this now, though, and take it to Istanbul, where we've got Sinem Kosoğlu. And Sinem, you've been really around in the last 24 hours. You were in Diyarbakir earlier today. You were in Üsküdar at a polling station. Now you're in Beşiktaş. Give us an idea about how smooth the process of voting is going. We've heard some incidents of minor incidents or limited incidents of tension, but overall, how are things going at polling stations?
Well, Sami, first of all, I must say that people still are willing to vote, both for President Erdogan supporters and opposition leader candidate Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu supporters. I must say that they are willing to vote because as their leaders made the call to go to polling stations and not to take the first round's votes granted. But I have to admit, in Istanbul and in eastern cities like Diyarbakir that we were yesterday, there is not much of a big excitement because apparently, people nearly accepted the result coming from the first round, both for the government side, President Erdogan's side, and Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu side. But we are seeing, we are on social media and on opposition media mainly, we are seeing reports that that show some incidents, you know, people, some opposition party members being attacked by ruling AK Party supporters, and some AK Party supporters who want to vote openly being pushed out by the opposition supporters. Of course, these are minor incidents, individual incidents. We cannot generalize it for across Turkey, as in Turkey, the election regulation is tough, strong, and the safety and security of the election is highly decent compared to many other countries. But of course, we can say that the tension is still there, Sami. And that's why we have seen Erdogan and Kılıçdaroğlu calling on their people to vote. And we saw a presidential spokesperson Ibrahim Kalin also making the same call for the Erdogan supporters to go to polls and cast their ballots. But of course, we don't know how the turnout is going to be. But I have to say, around here in Beşiktaş, this is one of the major districts in Istanbul where you have all transportation, universities, corporations, many other things all around here. You don't see an excitement among people. And people are tired of elections, Sami, because within the last two decades, Turkey has been through so many elections, referendums, and just in March 2024, which is less than a year away, Turkish people are going to cast their ballots for their mayoral candidates. And then after some time, in 4 years, again, they will be voting for their presidents. But of course, the people say they are going to the polls because it's their democratic rights to choose their leader, and they are voting for the future of their children. So there is this conscious, there is this responsibility, but not much of a big excitement. Back to you, Sami.
Thanks so much, Sinem. And you're right, Sinem, the appetite for voting, one of the key things people will be watching out for in this round, one of the things people will also be extrapolating from the first round, some of the key areas and patterns of voting, as Alexei O'Brien explains now.
Istanbul, Ankara and Izmir are Turkey's biggest cities. And in the election earlier this month, all the provinces around those cities, here in red, voted for the opposition candidate, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. That's a shift away from Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who took both Ankara and Istanbul in 2018. But this year, he lost those provinces by about 1 or 2 percentage points. And there was a much wider margin in Izmir. However, it traditionally votes for the opposition. Erdogan did win, as expected, in the central conservative heartland, here in yellow, his party's support base, but with fewer votes compared to 2018. He also won in 8 of the 11 provinces badly affected by those earthquakes in February. Analysts suggest that's because of the governing party's promise to rebuild the devastated cities. Further southeast is where most of the Kurdish population is concentrated. The main pro-Kurdish party under the Green Left banner threw its support behind Kılıçdaroğlu, and Kurdish voters followed suit. Then there's Western Europe, where the vast majority of the Turkish diaspora lives and its 3.4 million registered voters. About 55% of those cast ballots in the runoff vote. That's even more than in the May 14 election, when 57% of them voted for Erdogan. And the candidate who finished third in the first round, Sinan Oğan, won about 5% of votes overall. He has endorsed Erdogan to win. But it's unclear how Oğan's supporters will vote in the runoff and what that will mean for these two men and their political ambitions.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what we're seeing so far from the turnout patterns. And we are delighted to welcome back Ali Çalkaoğlu from Koç University. Great to have you back with us again, Ali. So far, I think, tell me, is it safe to say, by international standards, turnout looks, as far as we can see, quite healthy, at least. We can say
healthy,
that, right?
Yes.
But in some areas, maybe less than the first round? Is that the indications that we're getting?
We're getting information from isolated places that contradict one another. So I'm afraid it will be impossible to make a generalization from this.
All right. How's it looking in some of the key important areas that everybody was saying you've got to watch these areas when it comes to urban areas, Kurdish areas, nationalistic hubs, these will decide the vote. Can we say anything about voter turnout there so far?
Well, whatever you see behind us is the key, Istanbul. You have more than 10 million voters here. The turnout here, is it higher than before or lower? We get conflicting information. At least I do get information from family, friends, suggesting one place is up, one place is down. The other places are southeast and eastern Anatolia, where the Kurdish population is dominant. There, the turnout had been lower than the national average in the first election. How are they doing now? And will they turn out in the last couple of minutes? We still have about an hour, if not less. So the leaders are calling for their followers to come out and vote.
And do we have any sign that people are reacting to those last-minute calls by both sides?
Well, at least what we hear is, you know, again, isolated, but tension is rising in especially, you know, metropolitan areas. And we have to wait and see if this tension can be controlled and turned into a jubilation of the winning side, whoever that might be.
Right. One thing we do know is that overseas voters, their turnout has been higher so far in this round compared to the first one. Why? Is it too early to explain that one?
Well, it's higher, but not very high. It's about 55%. It's very difficult to travel to voting polls if you live in the U.S. Only 9 locations had this facility. People had to travel hours to actually cast their votes. And they did it 2 weeks earlier. Now they have to do it one more time. So most likely, those who did vote in the second round are predominantly those who did not vote in the first round.
Okay.
So having the same individuals vote in both rounds outside of Turkey is actually quite demanding.
Here's a key question, Ali, now. Do we have any indication about those 8 million who didn't vote in the first round, what they've decided to do in the second?
We don't know.
I'm really trying
We hope we knew, but that would require quite sophisticated research. and we didn't have time for that.
Right.
And we'll just have to wait and see the results. They will come out in 2 hours at most.
All right, and you'll be here with us to try and monitor that, I hope. Don't get blown away by the wind.
Well, the wind is the most important challenge.
It's picking up. Thanks so much, Ali Tarkoglu there. Well, as Ali said, we've got to wait and see. Talking about wait and see, a lot of people waiting to see what happens on one crucial issue that's been central in this election, the issue of refugees. As Noor Kurmus reports, it's a wait-and-see issue on both sides of the Turkey and Syria border.
Syrians who have experienced the horrors of war firsthand eagerly await news from Turkey. Many here have family members across the border and want to know how this election will affect them.
I have many relatives living in Turkey and working to support their families here. The calls we're hearing about deporting Syrians who are living there would have very bad consequences, especially on a humanitarian scale.
The displaced Syrians have been supported by humanitarian aid coming through the northern Turkish border, but they fear that it might disappear for good.
No matter who wins, we hope that Turkey's approach will not follow the approach of deporting Syrians, which will have dire future consequences on the humanitarian sector here, as more than 1.8 million people are already living in refugee camps.
Turkey's elections could also alter the region's political landscape. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's government has sent troops to northern Syria and has been coordinating with the Syrian opposition for years. And political activists believe the policies of whoever wins will shape the future dynamics of the entire region.
The Turkish elections have great significance for the Syrian issue. These elections have an effect on Syrians, especially in the north, and on Syrians presently in Turkey. As for us as a political body in Idlib, of course we believe that these elections are decided by the Turkish people.
As northern Syria continues to deal with the devastating effects of its 12-year war, many here wonder what the Turkish elections will mean for them. In Syria's bustling markets, there is a semblance of normalcy as people go about their daily routine. When we ask people here what they think of the Turkish elections, we were met with both optimism and concern. But for now, it is unclear what the outcome of the vote will mean for Syrians in this war-ravaged country. The Kurmush, Al Jazeera, Idlib, northern Syria.
Of course, the issue of refugees is just one of many on people's minds as they head to the ballot boxes. Amongst the other issues that have been raised in this election, the question of democracy, the question or allegations of autocratic rule, with international and domestic organizations saying the rule has been too autocratic lately, with jailings of journalists and civil society or people working in social media or posting in social media and so on. Let's continue this discussion then and bring in Seda Demiralp. She's a professor of political science at Işık University in Istanbul. First of all, let's take to pieces the democratic implications of this election, Seda.
Right. Well, the opposition suggested that an opposition victory would mean that even in hybrid regimes like Turkey, where the electoral competition isn't entirely fair, it is possible to change the government with elections. So an opposition victory would imply that democratization is possible with the right campaign, right election strategies and everything. So it would have a positive good news for democratizing countries throughout
the world. Well, we should also remember, Seda, that on the other side would point to the history of the CHP, the main party, and say when they were in power, they have a long history of allegations of being very autocratic in how they ran the country as well, right?
Right, yeah. But CHP claimed that they came a long way and they learned from their past mistakes. And in fact, if we look at their campaign, we can see a learning curve, right? I mean, their recent campaign focused on fighting poverty, needs of the average voter, instead of secularism or republican values they promoted in the past.
Right. A bit of a battle there going on in terms of the populist. Who claims the populist cause?
Well, I would say we saw a populism contest recently.
Between the two.
Right, and both sides making promises, targeting people's like daily, rather short-term oriented needs. And we saw Erdogan doing that. Erdogan was big about harnessing people's economic needs. He was big in populist politics. It's more new for the opposition. So I would say the opposition tried to invert populist strategies of the government, the ruling party, against themselves in this election.
Talking about inverting, did we see the candidates kind of switch roles a bit in the last 24, 48 hours, with one sounding more inclusive than he has and one sounding even more harshly nationalistic than he has?
Well, I guess we could say that to some extent. Kılıçdaroğlu's tone is hardening, at least much more than Erdogan's. Erdogan's recent speech at Beykoz, yesterday's speech, was it included positive, inclusive messages. We could say Erdogan feeling more confident, maybe making him more inclusive, and Kılıçdaroğlu is trying harder to mobilize more votes, which pushes him towards a more like harsher tone and a more negative campaign.
All right, always good talking. Thanks so much for coming back, Seda.
Sure.
Well, it's what now? About 38 minutes left for people to get out and vote. And we understand, according to the High Election Commission, they hope pretty soon after the votes close, they're going to have a meeting which they will decide whether to lift the media ban. Hopefully, pretty soon after that, we can get into starting to read those election tea leaves, try and get some indication of who might be forging ahead.